Hi, I'm Grace.
And I'm Amy.
And you're listening to our podcast.
Yes, good.
Where we are kicking off December and our Christmas month.
Woohoo!
Yay.
Let it snow. My voice broke, but whoa!
Let it snow. Speaking of.
If you haven't heard, Netflix put out a Netflix original movie that's an adaptation of a novel from 2008
by Maureen Johnson, John Green, and Lauren Miracle. I hope I'm pronouncing all of those things right.
And that's what we watched. It's like a YA movie, and here's your plot synopsis. In a small town on Christmas Eve, three teen romance stories play out. The first is Julie and Stuart, the latter of which is a famous music artist. They meet on a train stalled by the snow and end up spending the day together as he learns of a simpler life. Tobin and Angie, aka the Duke, have been best friends for years but are both realizing their feelings for one another. Addie and Dory are best friends having a falling out over, gasp, a boy, while Dory also pursues things with a girl she once had a, quote, thing with.
I feel like you went into, like, movie trailer voice there. In a small town on Christmas Eve.
In a small town on Christmas Eve.
Six lives are changed forever.
Dun dun dun. They all die.
And that's it. That's all we had to say about
Christmas horror movie. Those exist. Those are a thing.
Krampus.
Yeah.
That's the only one I can think of off the top of my head.
All I know about Krampus is an episode of a podcast I listen to where the podcast host and one of her really good friends go on rants about how much they hate Krampus.
Isn't Krampus like demon Santa goat?
Yeah, it's like a German myth where it's basically like Satan, but holiday comes and eats you if you're a bad child.
Is it really a goat or am I imagining that?
It's a goat in like a satanic way.
Okay.
And not like an actual way.
Okay. Makes perfect sense.
You
want to
Google a picture of Krampus?
I feel like I've seen it. I'm just forgetting.
Yeah, it's like a real myth.
Oh, yeah, I've seen this.
Yeah. It's a real myth. And it's German. And it is Satan.
Well, on that note, let's discuss Let It Snow.
Alright, so, neither of us have watched this movie prior to today or read the book it is adapted from. So, there is our context. Well, not today, but when we watched it, like, two days ago.
When we watched it, like, yeah. Yeah, that's true. I remember seeing the book because I had, you know, the massive John Green face that everyone had our age in high school. And I remember very vividly, like, walking through the John Green table at my Barnes & Noble and being like, I have that one. Should I get this one? No, I don't think it looks good. And then I skipped it over. And now I'm really wishing I'd read it because it became a movie.
I like that you say the John Green phase everybody had in high school. Meanwhile, I didn't read John Green until college.
I had mine. I guess mine was my senior year of high school.
I didn't know who he was. I just hadn't, like, gotten to his stuff yet. I was a little, like, late on picking up, like, actual teen romance that wasn't based in, like, science fiction or fantasy. So I read lot of, like, Hunger Games and, like, Uglies Pretty specials, like, that kind of stuff. But I hadn't read teen romance and Twilight. I read Twilight. But I hadn't read, if you hadn't guessed based on our previous episode, go listen to it. If you haven't, we talk about Robert Pattinson a lot and he's not in the movie we're supposed to be talking about. But I, didn't get to John Green and like realistic YA, novels until I think like my senior year of high school.
Did you just attack my pen?
Cat interruption.
Yeah, whenever everyone got into Perks of Being a Wallflower was my senior year of high school, and I read that and immediately delved into John Green. So that was my spiral phase.
I think I tried to read Perks of Being a Wallflower in high school, and I didn't finish it, but I have no idea what year that was.
I think mine was senior. I finished it at a family reunion because I didn't know anyone and I didn't particularly want to talk to them. So I sat there on the couch and I read Perks for like 4 hours straight.
Wow.
It was a good time.
I finished reading Paper Towns while on vacation with my family in a place where there was zero internet over Easter.
Nice. Good.
Yeah, that was a pretty good one. My family's really good at all sitting around and just reading.
I remember reading Paper Towns like a couple weeks before I graduated high school, which is the perfect time to read Paper Towns.
Oh, yeah, that is good.
Because, yeah, all John Green books, which is maybe why I didn't read Let It Snow at the time. bringing us back to our topic on hand. But for me, every time I
this
read
it... This is a podcast about Let It Snow.
But yeah, every time I read a John Green book, it's like the perfect time in my life to read that John Green book, which is maybe why I didn't read Let It Snow at the time, because somewhere I knew it was not yet time to read
Let It Snow. You had to read it on Christmas Eve. Come on.
Yeah, and it wasn't Christmas Eve, clearly, so didn't read it. But anyway, you want to talk about the movie now, Amy?
Yes, let's talk about the movie. I feel like a good place to start might just be saying which storyline was each of our favorites.
Oh, Dory, easily.
Yeah, okay, you're gay. Not yeah. that I'm not, but like, we could have called that one Grace.
Listen, there's a lesbian in it. She's the one I cared about the most.
Okay, I think I actually liked Stuart and Julie the best.
They were really good. Mm-hmm. They were my second favorite. You know, they might have been my favorite romance, but mm-hmm. I liked Dory and whatever her friend's name the best.
Addie.
I like Dory and Addie's relationship the best. Mm-hmm. But as far as romance goes, I agree with you.
I also do, though, really like in their storyline that they don't become romantic, because I feel like with Dory being gay, it would have been very easy for them to be like, oh, but, like, she has a crush on Addie, and that's why she wants better for her.
Yes.
And instead, there was just, like, a third-party love interest for Dory, so that you didn't think that that was where they were going to go with it. And I really do like that, because I think there's way too much, like, pining gay best friend, like, who secretly has a crush on the best friend kind of stuff out there. It's not as, like, it hasn't permeated culture as much as, like, other gay stereotype trend plotline kind of things, but it's still a pretty prominent one, and it perpetuates the idea of, like, when your friend comes out, then it must be because, like, they have a crush on you, and, like, it changes everything once you find out they're gay, because, like, now you can't have sleepovers, because, like, you know, like, that kind of thing. I made a face in the pause there that you can't
see.
She
did.
This is audio-only format.
And I think it also, like, if that happened, it would kind of undermine their entire friendship, too. Because mm-hmm. it's, like, I like the fact that there is a purely platonic relationship that's growing and evolving and happening along all of these other romantic relationships. So mm-hmm. if that had been Dory is advocating for Addie?
Yeah.
I can't remember her name. Dory's advocating for Addie, because she's in love with her, that would completely undermine their entire friendship, and it would mm-hmm. just be sad.
I also think that there's just great representation overall in the different kinds of relationships, because we have Stuart and Julie, who is, like, a new relationship, mm-hmm. and then we have Tobin and Angie, and they are, like, old friends who have known each other for years and years and years. And then we have best friends, so it's not a romantic relationship. And then we also do have the side of Dory having her, like, we have feelings and now we're going to pursue them relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, like, every kind of, like, way... Apologies if you can hear my cat screaming at the door even though we're both home.
He's not used to us both being home.
He just pitter-pattered over. Pitter-patter, pitter-patter.
Pitter-patter. Yeah, it makes it very, like, obviously this is supposed to be a slice of life. Like, they open the mm-hmm. movie being like, this is what happened to a bunch of random people on Christmas Eve.
The tow truck driver with the tinfoil on her shoulders is narrating.
Love her.
She's a great character.
She's a great character.
Except for the part where she throws a girl's phone out the window.
It was an accident, though.
It was, but, like, she
it
took
was still
the phone
shitty.
From her.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
She
took the phone
have.
From her and she shouldn't have, but, yeah. She was still... That was the only kind of, like, super annoying part to me, was that they had to have a character being like, look up from your phone once in a while. And I'm like, okay. Whatever.
Dating apps exist. You're still making human connections. Okay, but, like, not to go into a, like, phones are good thing, but, like, there really is, like, a giant misconception of, like, the fact that you really can, like, maintain a friendship over text. Because I would like to point out, how many friendships I have kept alive since college that are people where I just, like, semi-regularly text them. Because, like, I'm keeping up and in touch with them enough that, like, we still feel connected. So then when I physically see them, like, we haven't missed anything. Like, there's not awkwardness.
Yeah.
And, like, there's so much value to that. Because, like, you don't have time sometimes for, like, a whole-ass phone call. But you can shoot off a text being like, look at this funny thing I saw that I knew you would also think is funny.
I mean, how many times last year did you and me have super in-depth conversations?
Yeah.
Not very many. So, And yet here we are, and we still made a podcast together.
So the ultimate commitment.
Yeah.
Not our least, the podcast, though.
You get my point, though.
This is why people think we're dating.
Jesus Christ.
But yeah, there's good representation of, like, different kinds of relationships in this, which I really like.
Yeah, it's really good.
Stin!
Stin.
Oh, wait, which one did you like the least? I think I know which one you liked the least, though, because I think you said it while we were watching.
Angie and Tobin. Mm. And I liked both of their characters. I was just so bored by them the entire time. But, like, I guess they are the most done story, where it's like they've been friends forever, they both have feelings for each other, even though they're not saying it, and it causes conflict because they're not communicating. Like, and I think it was actually handled really well, and it was, they showed their chemistry off really well, but it still had the whole, like, I like you, but I don't want to say it, so I'm going to get mad at you for a minute thing, and then you're going to chase after me, and then we're going to admit our feelings, and la-di-da at the end.
Mm-hmm. I think, like, jealousy is a very overdone trope at this point that we're kind of tired of.
Yeah, that's basically what I was trying to say.
Because, like, they showed us their chemistry through the singing scene, and the singing scene was, like, the ultimate jealousy scene. Because then that other guy, I don't know if we have his name.
JP.
Yeah, JP got up and started dancing with Angie. And so, like, the scene that showed why they're good together and why, like, they vibe so well. Oh my god, what am I, like, Gen Z or something? Vibe.
These Gen Zs with their vibes these days.
I'm tweeting that. But yeah, so, and the interesting thing, too, though, is that it's, like, JP isn't, like, villainized, because I feel like a lot of time the person that the protagonist is jealous of then gets villainized because it's, like, oh, but, like, I'm so much better for, like, the person than they are kind of thing.
Yeah.
And, like, JP is just, like, a golden retriever of a human.
He's so good. He's literally perfect. He is the male version of a Mary Sue.
Mm-hmm. And so, when, like, modern, because it's all, like, oh, he, like, studied abroad.
He's a Jerry Stew.
And, so, I think that's done kind of well, though, is that we don't hate JP, we just understand, like, why he's so, like, too perfect and, like, easy to be jealous of.
I like that, too, because it means that in order for Angie to get together with Tobin, she had to make that choice rather than the choice was taken away from her. Because if JP was villainized, then it'd be like, is she going to choose JP or Tobin? Well, JP turns out to be a jerk, so she has to fall back on Tobin.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, it's like, JP's really great. He might even have a crush on her. We're never really told. But she goes after Tobin anyway. So, that's a lot nicer.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, but, like, did you notice that the timing in this movie is very odd? Like, the passage of time in this movie?
Because it was Tobin, all just paced weirdly to me.
Yeah. Tobin is sitting waiting for that tow truck for, like, 5 hours. Because so much other shit happens. And then he's still sitting in the ditch. And he also was sitting outside for, like, the entire time it took the sun to go down. Without them coming out and checking on him.
Could only be, like, 45 minutes in the winter, depending on when they live.
It's still 45 minutes, and he's sitting outside waiting for a tow truck, and he's cold, and they just didn't go check on him?
Yeah, no, it's weird. Also, like, where the heck was the tinfoil tow truck driver the entire day? Because she's driving, like, around, but, like, the town cannot be that big.
Right. And also, she says something where she's like, I just got a call about a guy in a ditch, and, like, at that point, he's already been sitting outside the church. So, like, when he called the tow truck company, they didn't call the lady in the actual truck and let her know until they'd already sang at the piano and, like, he'd gone out to the car.
True. Which, did we know when he called the tow truck?
Before they went into the church.
Okay.
Because he called them, and then they were, like, still standing around the car, and that's when the twins went by, so then they, like, hid, and then they were like, let's go in the church.
Right, okay. Yeah, I don't know. Also, are there more than one church?
Because there's a church that did the concert that, Stuart and Julie went to, and that's not the same church that they were in, I don't think.
I think it is, actually, because there's only two wise men in that concert.
Okay.
Because I kept waiting for him to randomly show up because he puts on the wise men's jacket for some reason. I think the problem we're having here, and neither of us have read the book, but I think the problem we're having here is that there's a lot of details in the book that got changed, And so they just didn't translate well, so we're very caught up on these details. Like,
yeah,
the whole giving, he took the wise man's coat thing was, it threw me off so much, more than it should have. But there were only two wise men instead of three in that show.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking that it was the same church, and Angie and JP were, I don't know, dancing in the rafters still. I have no idea.
They were just, like, up there in the Chinese dragons on stage.
Yeah. Don't know.
Yeah, it's just, like, odd. The pacing across, the like, pacing their fictional day is very weird.
Which I really want
to
know.
Because also, like, how many times do people leave and come back to the Waffle House? Like, 500. Yeah. Also, the cheer squad was at the Waffle House for what felt like 12 hours.
Yes. What was the cheer squad even doing? Like, were they from their school?
Or... I think so. I think it was, like...
What were they doing on Christmas Eve in their uniforms?
My guess is that they were, like, supposed to be, like, coming back from a tournament and then all went to Waffle House together.
Okay.
Because, like, we would do that after volleyball practice. We'd, like, go get food, you know?
Christmas Eve, though.
Yeah. No, it was a little odd, but, like, I'm guessing that's the idea, yeah. Is that they were all, like, at practice or something like that.
I really want to know what the pacing's like in the book, because it's written by three different people.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I read,
I bet you, though, and I don't know this for sure, but I bet in the book it's, like, one, and then one, and then one. They're not interspersed.
But they all do connect still.
Oh, I don't know then.
So I remember reading Will Grayson, Will Grayson by John Green and David Levithan, which I should really reread now that I know who David Levithan is. But anyway, I remember reading that, and the pacing of that and the way it intertwined was kind of confusing also, and I remember being kind of in it about the book at the time, even though I liked the storyline because of that. So I'm wondering if this book, I really want to know what it's like in this book. Maybe I should read it. I should just add it to my to-read list. I'm going to do that.
As I tweeted on air, now Grace adds a book to her to-read list on air. It's a momentous day.
Subscribe for more fascinating moments like this one. Anyway.
If you wanted an update, no one has favorited my tweet yet.
Give me a second. Who was your least favorite couple then?
I feel like this is so, like, bad to say because, like, I mean, not straight woman, but I think it might have been Dory and... What was the girl's name?
Is it Carrie? That's the only person else on the cast list that I...
Yeah.
Yeah, Carrie.
She was in a movie with Hannah Hart? I think it was Dory and Carrie just because of, like... the uncomfortableness of watching Dory interact with the cheer squad, and, like, I called super early that the reason she was, that, Carrie was acting the way that she was because she wasn't out, yeah. Like, first, it was supposed to be, like, a big twist, and it just really wasn't.
No, not at all. Anyone who has ever been in that situation is gonna be like, I'm really surprised that Dory wasn't like, oh my god, she's mm-hmm. not out.
They made it seem, though, like, when Carrie told her, I'm not out, that Carrie had told her before that she was.
They did.
But they didn't tell us that to begin with at all. So we were just like, she's not out. Like, what are you doing, Dory? Like, you're outing her, basically, to the cheer squad.
Yeah.
And, like, we didn't have the context that Dory had been told that she was out by her. And so we just felt like Dory was, like, being really, really oblivious and kind of, like, bad.
I feel like we might have actually gotten that information early on when she was talking to, not Ned from Spider-Man, but Ned from Spider-Man.
You mean Keon?
Obviously, I mean Keon. When she was talking to him about her initially, but I also feel like the setup to every single one of these stories I completely missed. I feel like it switched so quickly between all of the storylines and everyone, like, it was just a lot of dialogue with all of the music and the voiceover narration that I didn't pick up the beginning of any of these, so I feel like that might have come up.
I feel like the only time that I can say, okay, so two of the characters, I can say the first scene that we saw them in, because Stuart's was him doing the radio interview and singing,
yeah.
And then Julie's was being in line to try and get the elf for her mom's Christmas village.
I do
village.
Remember that.
Those are the only two. I don't know what the first shot was. Oh, wait! Dory's was her looking at the pig in the pet shop.
Yes. But, like, whenever they started interacting and actually setting up their storylines, there was just a lot of dialogue all at once.
Yeah, because here's the thing, too, is that when you're balancing this many characters, to cut between them quickly it's like you forget who's who really fast yes. because you don't know them yet. So by the time you get to the end, you can cut between them quickly because we know them and we know the situation they're in and we've spent time with them. But when you cut a lot at the beginning, you're just like, do I need to know that? Who was that girl? Like, why is there a new girl now?
Yeah.
Like, it's too much too quickly and you don't retain it.
Yes.
This kind of reminds me of the thing with The Last of Us where originally they didn't have the credits roll when they did. But then they put the credits where they did because people needed time to, like, process that a little girl had died. It's like, they didn't give us time to process.
Oh, yeah.
So we didn't remember anything.
Yes. I know what you're talking about now. I thought you were talking about the end, and I was like, Ellie doesn't die.
No, at the beginning, because the credits go after Joel's daughter is shot.
Yes. Also, moment of silence for The Last of Us being pushed back, because I'm still not over it.
Don't worry, we still have the second half of that episode saved for May now. Or let's later. Hope we still have this podcast in May. At what point are we going to talk about the fact that we're going to rename this and also go on a break?
Apparently right now.
Okay. Okay, so this podcast is changing names because Amy had an epiphany while driving home one day.
That's true. We are also taking a break come January. Mm-hmm. So if you want to stay on top of our updates, because we don't have anything set in stone right now,
yep.
Be sure to follow us at our Twitter or, you know, text us if you have our numbers.
We know that all of you guys are our friends. We know only our friends listen to this. Text us.
Or just wait in the void until we start bothering you about this podcast again.
Yeah, you can do that too.
Twiddle
your thumbs a little bit.
Look forward to, rebranding. Maybe some awesome theme music,
mm-hmm.
Some other surprises, and whatever else we throw at you. Mm-hmm.
And do we want to, like, say the new name, or should that be, like, a dramatic drum roll for, like, the last episode before the break?
I think we hold off for now.
Okay.
Let's hold off for now.
Hold off. Wait on the dramatic drum roll.
And now, back to your regularly scheduled programming.
What else do you have strong feelings about in this movie?
Crickets. I think that was the thing. I didn't have really strong feelings about this movie, which was nice, actually, mm-hmm. because it wasn't a bad movie, and it wasn't, like, a phenomenal movie. It was just kind of cute, and it had some good representation in it, and it had, I don't know, good music, cute scenes, actors I like. I'm cool with it.
I'm really interested if this movie is going to be the launching point for the careers of a lot of these people. Because if you think about when To All the Boys I've Loved Before came out, Noah Centineo's career just, like, skyrocketed after that. Because then he was in Sarah Burgess's The Loser, and then he booked a bunch of other stuff off of that, too. He had, like, another movie, and I think he's in a TV show now or something.
Right.
So I'm very curious, because I didn't know any of these people besides... The guy who plays Stuart is the voice of Miles Morales in Into the Spider-Verse.
Yep.
And then, obviously, Keon is the guy who's Ned in Spider-Man Homecoming and the rest of the Spider-Man trilogy with the MCU.
Yeah.
And so...
Other than that, there's, like, Joan Cusack and then a bunch of people you don't know.
Right. And so, it makes me think that maybe this will be the launching point for a lot of these young people's careers, because I feel like Netflix originals have kind of become that. Like, either CW or Netflix originals are launching yes. points for young careers.
And they were all actually really strong performances.
Yeah, there was nobody where I was, like, that uncomfortable, like, I'm watching Twilight and the actors are bad kind of feeling. Like, I didn't get that with anybody. Dude, I saw a clip from Twilight on Tumblr the other day, and I forgot how bad that acting was, and I really want to do a Twilight episode now just for us to, like, feel that discomfort and, like, talk about it.
I still want to finish drunk watching the series. We only got two in.
We should do a drunk watch and then do a drunk record. To cap it off.
Yes.
That'll be our return episode. Amidst this Twilight Renaissance, that will be the return episode.
How long has the Twilight Renaissance been going?
It's already been, like, a year, I think.
I think it's been more.
Yeah, because I think that we started rewatching it
our senior year
of college. We rewatched it because the Renaissance had started.
I don't think it's still going. I think it just has become...
It's meme-y now.
It is. It's just become a staple of pop culture again, mm-hmm. only now in a sarcastic way.
Yeah. My favorite is the Tumblr post where people pointed out that the Cullens just openly have their food sitting on the lunch table without, like, trays or anything.
It's, like, not even...
Yeah, it's not meals at all. And they just have it openly sitting on the table that, like... Cafeteria tables are disgusting. Why do they have it like that?
Yeah, they are.
Like, it's so funny. Like, who the hell did any of the, like, set design for that movie or, like, the mise-en-scene or anything? Because, like, it's bad. We should do Twilight and then we keep track of all of the weird shit we didn't notice when we were, like, actually in our Twilight phases.
Yes.
I'll keep, we'll keep a running list and that'll be a whole, like, section of the podcast.
Oh my god. Okay.
Anyways, not to digress.
No, not at all.
Okay, Netflix originals, though. Launching points for young people's careers.
Yeah, and yeah, they were all really good. Like, who's the actress who plays Julie?
Isabella Merced.
She was so good.
Mm-hmm.
She was very good. And Liv Hewson, who plays Dory, was also extremely, extremely good.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, everyone was so good.
I feel like I've seen Liv Hewson in something else, but I have no idea. I was thinking
that too.
Okay, cool. At least we're on the same page. Oh, she's in Before I Fall. I have seen that.
I have not seen any of these things, so maybe I'm crazy.
Okay, I might remember her from Before I Fall, but also I saw that like 6 years ago, so I don't know. Huh. But yeah, I feel like I've seen her in something else. Maybe she was in, like, a trailer that went viral. Like, the trailer for one of those things went viral at some point on Tumblr.
Possibly. But yeah.
J.J. Abrams talks about Baby Yoda. Okay. Let's figure out how to get back on topic.
We've got, like, honestly, maybe this 20 is minutes like, of content here.
Yeah, this is the challenge with us. Oh, here's the other thing. Why are all of these kids driving around so much on a day that it's actively snowing and it's Christmas Eve? Like, why aren't you just at home with your family?
Well, Tobin's having, like, his movie day with Angie.
Yeah, it seems like that's their tradition. But then they go to, like, multiple parties.
Well, that's what they decided, remember? Because they're like, what if
they instead of watching a movie. But also, then, like, why are there multiple parties that high schoolers are having on Christmas
Eve? I know! He's like, let's...
And why...
Why are Keon's parents leaving him alone?
Why are Keon's parents leaving him alone on Christmas? Because they're going to fly out of town. So he was going to be on Christmas alone and he's a high schooler? I'm so confused.
And then they come back and they're like, he's like, oh, oops, I'm sorry, I was going to have a party. And instead of being like, wow, you're grounded... They let him go off and have a party somewhere else.
He got called into work.
He did get called into work.
So my guess is that he was going to be grounded, and then he was like, oh, work called, and they're like, fine, you can go pick up a shift, like, make some money and put your back into it, and then he just threw a party at work instead.
Yeah.
Also, how does a party at a restaurant not get shut down? Because, like, wouldn't the cops figure that out? Because it's like, you're going to drive past the restaurant because it's probably on a more main road, and there's just a bunch of high schoolers, like, drinking in the parking lot openly. Like, they're all gonna get MIPs.
Yes, they are.
Can you tell that I was in a sorority and I was in charge of making sure that people didn't get MIPs sometimes? I wasn't the most in charge of that, but it was a concern of mine.
I really don't understand how this town works
at all. Let's talk about something. Yes. How come kids in YA movies always have easy access to alcohol, never get in trouble or caught or, like, anything that has, like, real repercussions?
I have the answer to this. They're in small towns.
That just, like, gives them a get-out-of-jail-free card for MIPs.
Yes, because, more often than not, they will either know the cops, or their parents will know the cops, or their parents will be the cops, or their parents will be the teachers, and it's literally like a get-out-of-jail-free card. Or, like, the cops slash teachers will be like, oh yeah, I did that when I was your age, just don't drink and drive.
Mm-hmm.
So, from experience, like, yes, you can get in trouble in those situations, but more often you will not, because it's a small town, you get away with shit, there's nothing else to do.
Meanwhile, in our small town where we went to college, they hand out MIPs like it's free
That's
candy on Halloween.
Town, though.
Like, yeah, but it's also bullshit, because they were on, like, a witch hunt.
Yeah, our university had a thing against alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
But, our university has a lot of things, so maybe
don't
go
it.
There. Boy, ripperoni.
Let's bring ripperoni back.
That's our rebrand.
Just call the podcast Ripperoni. We're very tired, I think.
Okay, anyway. Did you say who your favorite couple was?
Stuart and Julie.
Did we, either of us explain why they're our favorite couple?
No.
Let's do that.
Okay, I like Stuart and Julie because they get to know each other in this, like, really very, like, nice and benign way of just, like, fun and food and, like, simple things. Mm-hmm. And it's not, like, purposeful. It's not, like, let's go on a date. It's just, like, he's gonna buy her food because, like, they talked on the little walk up to the Waffle House. And then, like, at that point, they've connected enough to, like, keep walking together and then, like, sledding. And, like, he just wants to go sledding. Like, it's very, like, cute and natural.
Yes.
But I also like the nuance of the fact that their argument happens over, like, money, because that's, like, a very real thing that people argue about. And it's the fact that, like, he wants to help because he feels this connection to the family, and she views it as, like, a charity case because he has so much money to give.
Right.
So, like, he has the best intentions, but, like, it's just not something that is ever going to be received very well.
And I like that they're having kids deal with that, because mm-hmm. I feel like that
money's not something that people, like, ever have conflict with in movies, unless it's like, we're so rich, you know, and it's like adults in their 50s, like, being really, really rich or something.
Yeah, and I guess, like, that's more of a YA trope is to have the, like, the character whose family is struggling with money and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's a really great trope to have, because I feel like that's even harder to talk about, because when you're in high school, that's so out of your control.
Right. Like, you don't affect how much money is in your family a lot of times. And also, like, a lot of kids aren't, like, fully cognizant. They just know, like, if they need to be stressed about it or not.
Yes.
And so then you're stressed about something that you don't have control over, and that becomes really difficult. And I think it's not so much even that, like, her family doesn't have the money to properly care for her mom. It's just him, like, offering so that she will go to Columbia, that he can pay for a nurse so that her mom is taken care of without her.
Yeah.
So it's more to push her to, like, have a future and pursue what she wants to, so that, like, she doesn't end up, like, affecting the rest of her life based on the fact that she can't take a gap year from the school.
Yeah. I also really like that they have basically everyone in her life telling her that she needs to stop, not that she needs to stop worrying about her mom, but they had him being like, I think you need to tell your mom about Columbia, and I think you need to go, and they had the mom being like, you need to stop worrying about me and worry about yourself. Like, I feel like that's mm-hmm. such a, because I think it is more common than at least what people used to think for high school age students to have that kind of, like, put that kind of stress on themselves mm-hmm. without anyone telling them to, because the mom never wanted her to stay, clearly, and she still took that as what she had to do. And so I think that's a really good, it was such a small thing, and, like, you knew it was gonna happen too, but, like, I think that's a really good thing to include, to have them being like, basically, like, hey, you're still just a kid, you get to take care of yourself and you don't have to carry the world on your shoulders. Fun mm-hmm. fact, that's not what you're supposed to do when you're 17.
Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of, like, older kids in high school start putting really large burdens on themselves because, like, modernly, we're not really, like, telling them that those things aren't their responsibilities.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of kids become, like, too cognizant of their family's situation and then, like, take that on themselves and then stress themselves out so badly. And it's like, when you're that age, you already need 10 hours of sleep and no one's getting it. Like, they don't also need to be that stressed about family situations that are outside of their control.
Mm-hmm.
Or that they can't affect because they, you know, aren't making a full-time wage or, like, whatever it is.
Right.
Which, again, I guess some high schoolers probably are working full-time, but majority aren't.
That's another thing I really liked about this movie, is that they had such a range of, like, high school age people, which I guess we don't actually know how old Stuart is.
We're just, like, assuming that he's the same age as them, I guess.
God, I hope so.
I mean, if he's, like, a year older, though, that's fine.
Yeah, yeah, I just hope he's not, like, in his 20s or something. But you have, like, a young celebrity, and you have, like, Addie, who's clearly never really thought about any of this kind of stuff, and you have Dory and Keon, who work for, not a living, but, like, are working, and their parents really aren't in the picture. Like, it's just a really nice mix of situations and how those situations interact as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just like, oh, the working kids are friends and the rich kids are friends and that kind of thing. Like, that's not how it works.
Mm-hmm. I feel like, though, this movie, everybody's house that we did see was, like,
super
very,
nice.
Very nice.
Yeah.
It kind of makes me think of Love, Simon, where, like, his house is so nice, but at least, like, in Love, Simon, there is still the fact that,
they make a point of it. Kind of.
Abby lives in an apartment building. Like, they pick her up at her apartment building in the montage of him picking everybody up.
Yes.
And in this, yeah, everybody's house that we see is, like, very nice.
Which is, it's weird because, like, that's such a, like, set theme. Like, you want all your locations to look nice and pleasant and fun
right,
to live
like
in.
Like, they're aesthetic.
But it's also not realistic for a high school story, especially a small town high school story.
Right. And I think there is a way, too, that somebody can be living in a smaller, older house. And it could still be aesthetic, not as in, like, it's decorated super nicely, but, like, just because you don't have money doesn't mean that someone hasn't paid attention to whether their drapes and sofa match.
Yeah, it's just when, yeah, like, everyone lives in a multi-story house with plenty of space and open floor
and their
plans,
own bedroom.
And their own bedroom, yeah.
When have you ever seen a movie where the protagonist, if they are YA-like-esque, doesn't have their own bedroom? It never ever happens. Like, maybe their younger siblings share a bedroom, or like there's twins and they share a bedroom, but the protagonist in YA never ever has a shared bedroom, which probably is like different now in some of the really modern YA that is like getting to be very, very diverse. I'm just not well versed in it. But, like, I don't think I've ever seen a YA movie where they share a bedroom with a sibling.
Definitely not. Yeah. No. Which, again, like, how much of that is, like, thematic choice because you want to have a place for your protagonist to be alone and have the, like, montage or the wallowing or the exposition, as they say or write or think something, like.
Mm-hmm. Right. I feel like, although I think it'd be kind of fun if they're a wallower and then their younger sibling, like, barges in and they're like, I gotta do my homework. Like, and they, like, broke that pattern of, like, oh, they're really stressed about the thing that happened with their friends, so they're, like, in their room by themselves, like, overthinking it, and then the sibling, like, can disrupt that.
Yeah.
So you think it would be something that people would have put to use, but instead it's always, like, their parents knock on the door and they ignore it.
But if that happens, they can still put it to use, because a younger sibling can still, like, barge in and create whatever conflict, disruption you want.
Right, they could, but, like, you can't. Like, you can lock out your younger sibling if they have a separate bedroom. You can't really lock out somebody who shares the bedroom with you.
I mean, you could, but that'd be an entirely different scene.
Yes. I also feel like, though, if you were, like, prone to doing that to bully each other, your parents would just be like, no one gets a lock on their bedroom door, okay?
What I'm hearing is that you want to start writing YA again.
I always want to start writing YA again. Although I had my really good college athlete novel idea.
Yeah.
Or TV show idea. I don't know.
NaNoWriMo's over. You missed it.
I know. I should have written my cowboy novel. Missed the cowboy novel.
Mine has Red Dead elements in it a little bit.
I need to hash out the details of the cowboy novel better, though, before I actually start writing it. No cowboys in this. I'm sad.
Yeah.
I want to be a cowboy.
Hell yeah. I do have to say, I wasn't really a fan of any of the, like, climaxes of any of their storylines.
Well, none of them had, like, amazing twists or anything. Like, you could see it all coming, because of course they were going to end up together. So then, from a creative perspective, I would think that if you want them all to be together, and because of the nature of, like, a YA romance, everybody knows they're going to be together, you have to give it a twist that they're together in an unexpected way. But all of them were just cliche, like, oh, now they're standing and talking, and it's the moment, and now they're kissing.
Dun, dun, dun.
Like, that was all of them.
Yeah.
Like, why wasn't one, like, oh, like, they're arguing, but they're accidentally under the mistletoe, now they have to kiss, or something. Like, you could just give it some sort of twist.
Yeah, and I think also, like, because they all happened at the same time, it just got, like, as soon as the second one played, you were like, oh, okay, we're into this part of the movie now. Mm-hmm. Like, if they'd been balanced out, or if, like, one of them had been building for longer, I don't know. But, like,
every... Well, like, two of them conclude fully before everyone ends up at the Waffle House, and then we're waiting for the last couple to conclude at the Waffle House.
Or, like,
But I feel like they wanted to give everybody really equal time, so then to have two of them, like, end up together early and then have, like, one you're waiting on would put too much emphasis on that one, and I feel like they wanted, like...
That's true.
A lot of equality between, like... time and stress on, like, each relationship.
And they did. They balanced it out really well. And I like how it was, same with About Time, where everything was very neatly put together. Even if it wasn't the most creative way, it was all packaged very nicely and no loose ends. And, like, the way that Addie gets with JP at the end was quite cute, even though it's also quite convenient.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
I did not see that coming, however, and I was like, oh, when I saw it.
Yeah, both of us were like, oh, okay, cool.
She found a good guy.
Yay. Oh, we love JP.
Mm-hmm.
And she's going to have to learn how to do long distance, which means she'll be on her phone a lot more.
But oh well.
But oh well. They didn't think that one through. I don't know. It was a nice, neat, little, cutesy YA movie. I've seen many worse. I've seen many better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like it was very run-of-the-mill. Like, this wasn't anything revolutionary. It's just, like, Netflix was like, remember that John Green novel that never got adapted? Let's just see if the rights are available. And yeah. They, like, knew it would get clicks, and because it's around Christmas, would get, like, a lot of clicks, because, like, Christmas movies sell really, really well. So, like, they just did it.
Yeah.
And I don't think they totally cared about making it revolutionary. They were just like, let's make a YA Christmas movie so that, like, people will watch it.
To be fair, though, whoever was behind the screenplay of this added a lot, because...
That's true.
Like we said, Stuart in the book is not a radio star, he's just a guy on the train.
Mm-hmm.
And Dory's not in the book at all, I don't think, and she's definitely not gay if she is.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, they did a real good job with adding it, and, like, not that gay characters are revolutionary, but I'm still just really happy when we get one that isn't super dramatic or dead or tragic or that kind of thing. So, like, mm-hmm. to have just a normal high school lesbian who is out and gets a relationship, like, no matter what happens with her, that's cool. So, I think it's just, it's nice that this is such a, like, normal kind of movie, because, mm-hmm. like, a couple years ago, this would have been revolutionary.
Right.
That's my representation talk of the day.
Well, think about, like, if this came out prior to Love, Simon and had Dory's storyline in there, that's what we would have talked about and, like, flocked to see to the extent people went to Love, Simon, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is, I remember when people got mad about, mad. I'm gonna not back down on that. People were upset about Love, Simon because it was, like, a upper middle class white boy who was gay. Mm-hmm. And I remember being like, yes, but one, it's well written. And, like, those are still stories we don't necessarily get. And two, it's, unfortunately, like, that's how you have to accept things. So, like...
That's how you get the door to start opening, and then more stuff can come through.
But rich, like, white gays are the gateway gays, and we need people to accept them. They are
the Trojan horse gays.
Yes! They look like you, they talk like you, except for one small difference.
I'm just like you.
Exactly.
Isn't that what he says in the beginning monologue?
Yes. But I remember thinking that at the time and being like, yeah, it's kind of frustrating that you don't get to, that we, not every gay person gets to see themselves on there, but, like, this is how we start, and this is how you mm-hmm. get further representation. And now we have a working class lesbian.
Right.
So, and, you know, all the other representation that's out there these days. But, yeah. Yeah.
It's like, that has to open the door, because people are always going to first accept the, like, white boy before they're going to accept, like, representation in other forms.
Yeah. And I think Love, Simon has done, and, like, intersectionality
scares people, so.
Yeah. Well, and even like, Love, Simon itself, even Becky Alberti, right?
Yes.
Even Becky Alberti herself, like, started with the upper middle class white boy, and then immediately was like, wait a second, and wrote her sequel novel about an interracial female couple.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, clearly that's just how the progression works. And that it is. That's how it is working.
I'm not sure if the upside of Unrequited came out before or after.
That's true. Well, she wrote one of the sequels. Leah on the Offbeat.
Well, the upside of Unrequited still has So the girl and her sister, their moms are lesbians.
Okay.
Oh, wait, no, I think one of them's a lesbian, one of them's bi. And her sister's gay.
Okay, see? More representation. That's not a upper middle class white boy.
Yeah. You just gotta Trojan horse it in with a white boy.
Gotta fake him out with a white boy.
Are we about to name the podcast episode either Trojan Horse White Boy or You Gotta Fake It With a White Boy?
Okay, you gotta fake it with a white boy and you gotta fake him out with a white boy are two very different things.
That's true. Oh my god.
Especially when you're talking about gay women.
And you, like, make noises when I make sexual jokes of any kind.
I'm keeping this in.
Okay. You're very proud of the one sexual joke you've ever made.
But anyway, let it snow.
Okay, here's another thing that kind of bothered me.
Yeah.
The pet store sold a pet pig to, like, a 17-year-old girl.
What the hell?
Like, one, you gotta be 18 to buy animals in a pet store. Like, I'm pretty sure
she could that's be 18. Like... It is their senior year.
Okay, so she could be 18. However, like... Are they... They're not thinking that through. Why are you buying a pig? You guys are probably going to go off to college or something. Like, can you financially afford to have a pet pig? Like, is this a logical decision? Did your parents agree to this since it's going to be in their house?
That is another thing. And I know this part wasn't written by... This storyline wasn't written by John Green, but it's such a John Green theme that, like, their friendship gimmick was a pig.
Mm-hmm.
Like... That is another thing that probably translated way better in the novel, because we don't even know why the pig is a thing. We just know
we
that
we literally
she...
see at the beginning that she's Dory's looking at the pig.
Yeah. And then her room has pig stuff in it, and she says something mm-hmm. about, like, the animal the thing we've been obsessed with since we were little kids. So, like, we know that pigs are a thing in their friendship.
But we don't even know why. And we don't see that much of it.
No. I really do wish that as happy as I was to go to bed after only an hour and a half the other night when we were watching this, I wish it had been longer, because I feel like there's a lot more background that would have helped a lot.
Yes, there was a lot that they could have spent time fleshing out more that wouldn't have felt drawn out, but instead would have just added to the story.
Yeah, because that's it. None of the characters are super in-depth, and maybe that's why we like Julie and Stuart so much, because I think they have the most depth to them.
Yes, because with Julie with her mom and everything, yeah. And then seeing that, like, there doesn't seem to be a dad in the picture, but there's her grandpa. I feel like that makes us feel the most connected to her, because we got a really good look into, like, her life.
Yeah, and we don't see anyone else's life. We see them with their friends, and that's it.
Right, and I think we like Stuart because he got along with her family.
Yes.
And with everybody else's relationships, we just see them at this, like, one point in time, but we don't know what, like, the future of that relationship looks like at all. Meanwhile, I can picture, like, Stuart going to Julie's house for, like, Thanksgiving or something.
Yes.
And the fact that, like, they would get along and they'd probably be, like, dancing in the living room.
And that's just it. They have taken the next step in their relationship by spending that whole day together and meeting her family and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And by kind of, because I think their conflict was the most serious.
Yes.
And so they had that, like, he did come back, or however they got back together again.
Yeah, he came to the Waffle House.
Yeah, so, yeah, it feels like they are moved on to the next step rather than just now patching up a conflict. Because everyone else just ended up on, like, conflict patched up the end, whereas, yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I did really like at the Waffle House at the end all of the scenes of people dancing and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, like, very, very fun. And if you were, like, paying attention, you could see the other couples in the background of shots of, like, one of the couples.
Yeah.
It was very, very cute.
It was also fun to see how they all did actually know each other, because it's, mm-hmm. like, it's one of those things where you know that they're all going to interact at some point, but, like, they didn't force it as much, so, like, Julie was mostly separate from all the others, but, like, we did see her walk in and Dory, like, yelled at her for help or something like that, mm-hmm. and it was such a natural, like, we all go to school together and we're kind of friends, and so that's how we interact randomly, and it's not a huge part of our lives, but, like, we are still friends.
Mm-hmm. Can we also take a moment for how ingenious it is that they made the decorations out of the little, like, ketchup cups? Where they, like, strung them together and hung them from the ceiling in the Waffle House?
I did not catch this.
You didn't? Okay, so you know how when they went into the storage thing and they were like, we gotta make this party better, and they went in the closet?
Yeah.
They were looking at, like, restaurant supplies. And what they did was they took all the little, like, paper ketchup cups
mm-hmm.
and they, like, put a string through them all and they were hanging from the ceiling, so it was almost like garlands.
Oh, okay.
And that was how they got all their cool decorations. It was all, like, restaurant supplies. Like, paper goods.
You know, I think that's one of my favorite things about Christmas decorations is you can make them out of basically anything.
Yeah. Like, you can make a garland out of anything that you, like, attach to a string somehow.
Yeah. And also, makeshift Christmas is such a cool style.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
I think, too, that's something that is very easy to make, like... So you know that there's kind of the trope where it's like, oh, but we, like, made our own fun.
Yeah.
I feel like that's something where it's like, you grew up poor and you didn't have money for Christmas decorations, but you were able to buy, like, this cheap thing and string it together, and that was your Christmas garland, and it actually looked great.
I mean, that's where popcorn garland comes from.
Right. And it's, like, that kind of idea where it's, like, we didn't have much, but we, like,
yeah.
made all of this magic out of what we did have.
And that's such a Christmas story, too. That is literally the Christmas story.
That's why, like, it goes together so well, I think.
Yeah. And yeah. I think that's really cool, too, for, like, a bunch of high schoolers to do that. Because, of mm-hmm. course, a bunch of high schoolers who work at a Waffle House are gonna have to do that with their Christmas decorations. Because, for some reason, they're not with their families on Christmas Eve.
I'm still so confused about that. My mom would have kicked my ass if I wasn't home on Christmas Eve spending time with family. Like, I could have done something during the day, but by the evening, like, I should have been home
yeah.
for dinner, and then we would, like, watch a movie or play board games and, like, have family time.
Girl, I would have been dressed up and at church at that point.
Okay, well, I didn't do that. Grace. Ever.
I feel like this episode's gonna sound like we're drunk. We're not.
We're not. We just don't know what to say, and I think we're both a little tired.
We're a little tired. It's the end of the week.
Oh.
The cats were acting crazy. We have a new recording set up. So if this made any sense at all,
subscribe.
Subscribe. And if it did not make any sense and you want to ask for clarification, hit us up on our Twitter at YesGoodPodcast.
Or if you're more old-fashioned, we have an email. YesGoodPodcast@gmail.com.
You said it right.
Yay!
You can also follow our personal Twitters. I am Grace_Jessica, and that is Jessica with two A's.
I am Hey It's Amy J. That's Hey It's _AmyJ. AmyJay.
And like we said, stay tuned for the rest of the month. We've got more Christmas episodes coming out
mm-hmm.
About longer movies than this. So
yes.
Maybe
well,
we'll
also
go on
movies
as many
that we have more feelings about.
Possibly. Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Well, we're watching my favorite Christmas movie. We're watching your favorite movie. And...
White Christmas.
And an old movie.
And an old movie. And, yeah, and after that, we will be going on a break to rebrand and get some really exciting stuff up for all three of you guys. So,
yeah, well, it's going to be, like, more in-depth episodes that have, like, theses coming in, and just, like, I don't know, cool stuff.
So, stay tuned, and have a great December, and if it snows 2 inches and your town is going crazy... Maybe be on the lookout for your next significant other.
Happy holidays.
Have a yes good day.